It's roulette.
Boom. All right. Hey, we got three PRs. Three RFCs for us today to discuss. Everybody ready?
Yes.
Yes. All right. The first one is RFC number 35. That's C string versus bytes or C pointer is the title on it.
Yes.
This is mostly a Mouthy and Gem C. I wonder, is that how you pronounce it? That Mouthy? That's the way I always say it in my head.
Malta.
Malta. Okay.
Malta.
All right. You can help me with that later so I get it right. But yep. I'm in favor of this. I assume Joe is in favor. I think he gave a thumbs up.
The promises test? Yeah.
No, not the promises test. This is RFC 35, the string, C string,
yes,
and bytes one.
Yeah.
Sylvan, do you want to have a look? Anybody else?
Yeah, it's clearly a good idea. It's just a question of which names did we end up with?
The names that we ended up with are the ones that are in the final RFC itself.
So C pointer, I think, is the name we ended up with. C string gives you the null terminative. C pointer gives you just the pointer for string or for array.
Awesome. So array will only have C pointer.
Right.
Sweet. This is a definite yay. I like this very much, Lee.
All right. I'm going to merge this. All right. Unless anybody, they got 2 seconds. All right. Okay. Next one is number 36, TCP must be connected. I'm in favor, in case you couldn't figure that out.
So, my only question, I'm definitely in favor. My question is, do we black hole or do we put it in pending?
This is precisely to stop it from going into pending. So what can happen if, and this is detailed in there, what can happen if you don't know exactly how this works internally, mm-hmm, is that if you ignore the connection failed, right? And then send to it, then pending grows without regard. Pending just keeps growing and growing and growing. And this would black hole it in that case so that it, your data at least doesn't arrive, and that should at least be, in my mind, easier to track down than why is memory growing like crazy in this thing. Either way, this is how it works. You need to know something, but I think this is a much better default scenario.
Yeah, I think this is absolutely the right thing to do. And that you have to pay attention to the change in the state machine that's reflected on your notifier. Yeah, this is yay.
And just to be clear, I'm just checking, sent and sent V would not be called in this case?
Right.
Correct.
Cool. Okay.
They would not be called.
Yeah, sounds good.
It would be the same as if it was closed. It treats it the same way.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay, one more. This is one where Joe definitely helped me improve it. And it has possibilities where for a couple of different things in terms of method names and whatnot that haven't been determined. But I figure that's partially an implementation thing and not all that super important. It's number 37, adding TCP back pressure hooks.
Excellent.
The general idea behind these has been used in the Sendence version, but not, there are changes from that for improvements that Joe came up with, better names.
This is really good.
Note the, like one of the bigger areas where this could come up, but I think it would certainly make sense as something that could be done, is I picked those values for Windows pretty much out of thin air.
Yeah.
Right. But on the other hand, as far as I could tell, there are already other magic values of doing similar-ish sort of things for the IOCP stuff, which also I couldn't find any reason when looking at how IOCP works for why they were chosen either. So
yes,
it seems sort of arbitrary at this point with waiting for people to do more stuff on Windows and possibly come up with better values.
That's totally great. Yeah, I really like this. Also, nice names.
Well, I think Mute is Joe's name.
Nice one, Joe.
It was much better than whatever I had. I don't remember what it was, but it was a definite improvement.
I vote yes.
Yes.
Anybody against? All right. Merging, and on to pull requests. Okay, so we're moving over to the Pony C repo and PRs. Let's start them from backwards. Let's see, there's still one. Yeah, okay, so since the last time it looks like it was discussed, there was an update, at least in terms of comment, on 1270. So I wanted to highlight that.
Ah, great. Yeah, we talked about this last week.
Okay. Nothing was updated on it, so.
Yeah.
Is there anything to update or request or what?
The only issue is that while this does seem to fix the problem,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't appear that it should fix the problem. Because normalization should have happened in sugar, which happens before this is called. I'm tempted to merge it and worry about other possible edge cases later. Just because I haven't had time to go into it in detail. I think better to, it certainly won't harm anything to put this change in.
I'm okay with that. I mean, I have no opinion because I don't know anything about it really. Is there anybody else who has any contributions to that, or should we go ahead and merge it? Joe?
No contradictions. It seems like a problem that not many people are going to run into, and if we find it's an issue, we can come back and investigate it again.
Okay.
I think we should just go ahead and merge it, I guess.
Okay, cool.
Merged. All right. How did I do that? Okay. Next is 1278. And Sylvan, what I ran through for you last time on this was incorrect.
Oh.
And you were incorrect. We were both incorrect. It wouldn't actually work.
Oh, dear.
I believe if you go down to, where is it in here? Blah, blah, blah. I put it. Okay. Yes. If you go to issue 1282.
Okay. Is it issue
1282? Issue 1282. Is it issue 1282?
I don't see 1282. 1282 is closed.
No, yeah, it's not 1282. Hold on. I dropped the thing here. Where on earth?
1228? No. That was just guessing on the usual.
God damn it. Where did I? Oh, I might have put it on 1268. Yes. 1268.
There it is.
1268. I believe this would be the one from 3 days ago. I believe this is the actual correct implementation.
Okay.
But I would like your verification on that.
So because you call the underlying notifier.
Yeah, we call the notifier. We have to call the notifier in sent, not in poll, because if you do it in poll, then you get wrapped back around to the to the notifier, and you just keep going around and around and around.
I see. Yep.
Which means that it still requires write final to be public, right? Which I think is kind of a smell, but I think this should be the fix to the current issue.
Hmm. I'm not worried as much as I should be about write final being public.
Yeah. Yes. I would guess that might be the case.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. You're right. This makes sense to me. And then notified. You're saying let notified equals where, and then SSL write notified. Yeah. Right. I see.
I don't totally understand why write final needs to be private.
So, I it doesn't have to be private. I think it's a smell that a thing which is wrapping TCP connection needs to go down into what in the end is an internal implementation detail of TCP connection.
Okay. Well, I guess if
it has to be right now. It just makes me. It's another thing that makes me go, I'm not sure that the API for how TCP connection works is correct.
Yeah, maybe we should kind of pursue this from the direction of that idea we were talking about earlier, where we have an internal class that does most of what TCP connection does that you can use in your own actors, and it's also used in the TCP connection actor. And that would have the synchronous write API that you care about.
That's possible. I think it's not something that we can fix right now, and I wouldn't try to fix as part of this, but it could be there. The other thing that came up from this one actually is that, so how do we go about testing the SSL stuff? Do we need to generate a couple certificates for doing SSL? Like we have the certificate generated in the examples in HTTP GET, because it looks like you can't do an in-memory one or anything like that from what Malthy said. And, you know, having tests for this would be excellent, but I'm not sure what the right way to go about testing that would be. Should we be generating certificates for the SSL for like client side and server side for our tests?
So to test every path, yes. I think we could use the ones that are in the examples and move or copy, I'm not sure which is the right thing to do. Those certs into packages, net HTTPS, packages net SSL. And have a test file in there that references those. And then they're reference certs that are included in the package for testing purposes. I think that's okay to have data.
Yeah. I mean, that was my thought as well, but I thought that should definitely get run by other folks. Particularly Joe, do you have any thoughts on that? As you seem to be the most test focused between the three of us.
I can say it definitely kind of makes me cringe to have extra test fixtures being distributed with the package, which also contains the test, and you know, just sort of another level of cringe of the
of the non-separation of package versus tests for package.
Yeah. That's kind of the reaction it brings to me. I don't know. Would it be worth looking at an API where you can load in a cert from memory?
We certainly could. Yeah.
If we go down that path, then and which I also think is a perfectly reasonable one, then I would say that we modify the issue that this was fixing to say that we can accept this fix for the problem that currently exists without tests, and then we open an issue to be able to load SSL stuff from search from memory so that we can do the tests.
Yeah, I think that sounds like a reasonable path to me.
Okay.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and do that one. Okay.
Somebody should still test this. I'm sure somebody has, but I just wanted to...
I tested it locally for myself, and it fixed the problem.
Okay. That's good enough for me for now.
That was, you know... And so, but that was still that I want someone to look at this and make sure that I didn't break something that I can't see here that I didn't test.
It passes the look and smell test. Just for reference, right now in SSL context, there's a set cert that uses the underlying OpenSSL function, SSL context use certificate chain file.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a SSL context use certificate that takes an SSL that takes an X509 directly. What that doesn't give you is a cert chain. So it might take a bit of fiddling to figure out how to do that with an in-memory thing. And also how to handle multiple routes or testing with multiple routes. Basically, it's a little tricky. That's all.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it'll be possible.
Yes. I had a fun one. I had a fun one with that. Yes. Okay. 1292. This is... Theo has this mostly completed, except he can't figure out how to do this on Windows. And perhaps somebody knows how to get a standard way that we could get the compiler version that PonyC was built with on Windows. If not, my suggestion was going to be that the way he has it right now is that that it would use an empty string for Windows, and we could open an issue specifically for the Windows support on this. And then be able to merge this once the memory leak is fixed.
Okay.
I can take a look at this.
Fantastic.
Who said that?
That was Gordon.
Oh, hey, Gordon. Oh, awesome. Oh, Gordon, I didn't notice.
Our Windows savior.
we need to. I remember in the early days with Travis CI, when I gave them like some donations, they sent me, you know, these love certificates. I feel like we need to make some like Windows Savior certificates and send them to Gordon.
Oh no!
Definitely.
Don't back yourself in this, Gordon.
All right. So cool.
Yeah, I'll take a look at the patch and I'll send. It's a patch.
Sounds good.
Nice. Awesome. 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 That's even better than my idea. Okay, we have 1300. And this is Benoit, and he slapped a big do not merge on it and said that there should be that 1299. Okay, so we issue 1299. That's actually what we want to discuss. Let's bounce over to that. Issue 1299, clarify platform support.
All right.
And just ignore my comment and the bit that follows after.
I This is
also, by the way, I hadn't actually fully read the unknown part where it said I haven't been able to figure out the minimum version required since their changelog is crap, and I really have to agree with that.
So as you started to talk, I started to talk saying I want to second the fact that Apple's changelog is crap. So 1299 doesn't seem so much like a let's discuss as a yes, I totally agree. Like, yes, this is exactly right and good. And we should exactly have this. What Benoit has written here, just straight into the read.
Does anybody disagree? Benoit, does that give you everything that you need?
My question about this was mainly about what should we really support. For example, should we support MIPS? Because in the pull request I made, if we merge this and for example, if we can today compile the compiler on MIPS, I don't know if it is possible, but after we merge the pull request, it won't be possible to compile anymore. So
I know Dara has been slowly doing work on MIPS support because he wanted to support one of those chips, and he had it at least part of the way there, but I don't know that it would be fully there, and that was on his own fork. And that's been going on for at least 9 or 10 months now when he has time. So I would say that at this point we don't have MIPS support.
Okay. So on
the other hand, to achieve MIPS support using your change in 1300, looks pretty easy. Am I crazy?
Yeah, it should be possible.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Yeah, no, I wonder where Dara is with the MIPS thing. He used to check in every now and then and say, hey, I've got it to do X. Okay, and we have 1302, also Benoit's. For some LLVM 3.9 support.
So are we merging 1300?
Do you want to merge 1300? Benoit, you have do not merge on it. Should we take do not merge off and merge it?
Yeah, if we agree on the platform thing, then it can be merged.
Fantastic.
Sylvan, you haven't merged anything in a while. Do you want to hit the merge button?
Yes, I do. Thank you. Yes.
Nice. Okay. And okay, then 1302.
Oh, wow. Thank you, Benoit. This is gruesome. I'm so sorry you had to do this. Oh boy. This looks good. It also really, really makes me want to consider starting to deprecate older LLVM support, but I suppose at this point we're at least keeping it relatively constrained in where we're pissing all over our own code base to support LLVM, as in it's in gencall and codegen.c. And I guess a little bit in GenFun.
I love the name GenFun. GenFun.
Anything with fun is automatically better than something without fun. Yeah. And actually now with this, it's leaking into GenPrim as well, and it has to. It's not like there's a better way to do it.
I have a question about this. Why were spaces added between the bang and the if and end ifs on the new one, on some of these? If you look at GenPrim C line, the change for on line 163 and 165, for example?
It's because they're now embedded in a wrapping if.
Okay, all right. That makes sense. Yep. Okay. It's hard to tell with the context that's provided in this.
Yeah. I find myself using the GitHub expand button quite often.
So, merge?
I think merge. With a huge thank you to Benoit, because that was a crufty one. Thank you.
I know nothing about LLVM, so I have no comment. Well, I know things about LLVM, but not enough about the attributes. So, you can hit merge if you want to.
Oh yeah, 1302, merging.
Alrighty. Dun, 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 dun. Okay, let's bounce over to issues. And, what issues do we have that are opened and have... Oh my, did we never discuss
that? Should we look at 1303?
1303? Well, it failed the... wait, why did it say a minute ago that it failed? Oh, I requested changes. Never mind.
But he made the changes.
Beep, 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 beep. Hey, all I saw was a big red X, okay?
The big red X that you made.
The big red X that I made. I approve change. Yep, that looks good to me.
Yes, yes.
Excellent.
You're here.
You're here. All right. Merge. Boom, merged. Okay.
Fantastic.
All right. Dun, 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 dun. Issues. Do we want to start with, we have ones that go all the way back to February 2nd and that we haven't, but let's do some of the newer ones, shall we? How about we start with, let's go from newest to oldest. That should be fun. 1306.
Open is what I just found. Malpa filed a PR to remove a duplicate method that was basically it was a typo from a long time ago where a method was implemented twice, but because of case methods, it was allowed to compile. It was seen as two different cases of the same method, but the cases in the example weren't actually different in any way. And this led me to the realization that case methods and match statements both allow you to have a match statement that can never match because it would have already matched a preceding one.
Absolutely, they do. And the solution to this is...
Don't say exhaustion match.
Then I can't say it.
Fuck. Yeah, okay.
The sentence will never be finished.
All right. Okay. There we go. Okay. So there's an issue open for exhaustive match.
Okay. Well, if it's really as if it's completely overlapping with exhaustive match, I'll close this issue and link to the other one.
It is.
Yep. It's issue 60, by the way, Joe.
60, oh man.
Like I said, it's a really old one. That's why I said, that's why I told Sylvan not to say exhausted match.
So I just posted the solution on that issue.
Ooh, it's a paper.
It's a paper. It's an excellent paper. It applies almost exactly to Pony. It is a tricky thing to implement. Yeah, so there you go.
Oh, wait. Did Simon Payton-Jones write this?
Yes.
No, yes, he did. Well, he's over here on the far right-hand side. Aren't the people who actually did most of the work usually on the far left-hand side?
Yeah, people have different ways of setting things up.
Okay.
I don't know who did the majority of the work.
Oh, it's got Haskell.
Okay, well, so that answers enough of it for now. I think we can. Should we close the issue or should we leave it open?
I think we should close it, and because it's the same thing.
I'd reference 60, though.
He already did.
Oh, okay. All right. I don't know. I didn't see. So next is 1298. This would be one where I would ask everybody on here on their particular platform to try building the HTTP GET client and then trying to hit HTTPS Google, www.google.com, and see what happens for you. For me, on OS X El Capitan with LLVM 3.8, with the latest version of Pony, I always get a 500, but it appears that there is at least one person who does not always get 500s, but they're on Mac OS Sierra, so I'm not sure. It would appear that it's either a weird Google thing or we have an additional bug in this somewhere that could be exposed possibly.
Works on my machine. I'm using Linux Mint.
Can anybody who tries it leave a comment on here, and then we can come back to it and at least have a better idea of where the problem might, how big the problem is. And that's really all there is for that one. Okay. Let's see. Uh, 1275. There's been some movement on this. Joe Benoit, is there, looks like there was a question for Sylvan specifically on this from a couple days ago. So I dropped the needs discussion during sync on this. If you guys want to provide any color or background.
So that's quite interesting. So I had previously put a hack in to reach.c to elide duplicate interface types at compile time. And NY is right that if we elide ones that we can elide at sugar lambda, when we're doing sugar lambda type, that is a very good thing.
So you're saying it looks like a good solution?
Well, if it's possible. The problem is
so my worry was that it was going to end up being a solution that still leaves edge cases. If you look at my last comment on there, if, for example, you have... It basically comes down to how you're comparing in Sugar whether the two interfaces are equivalent And anything short of actually fully computing their types and checking is eq type is going to leave edge cases where, you know, for example, if you only compare the nominal types, they could end up pointing to the same, like it could be a type alias of the same thing. So you'd have things that you saw as not being able to combine, and thus you'd hit this same problem.
Yeah.
Basically, you need full type resolution in order to do it.
Oof.
Which, as I said, kind of means you need to move it to the expression pass, where we have a bunch of other crap shoved in that isn't really related to type checking, but needs type checking, is needed by type checking.
Yeah.
And like I said, I'm currently working on a PR that extracts some of the things that are unrelated to type checking to a separate pass. But that's not really directly related to this.
That's a really, I'm glad you pointed this out, Joe, because you're absolutely right. So, the expert pass is a pure type checking pass in theory, but like all expression passes in all compilers, it becomes filthified by compiler transformations that need to know types in order to transform, in order to create a type that will be needed by the other things that need to know types.
Right. So, Sylvan, you said you already have a hack in the reach pass to elide interface types that can be elided. So why is that not happening here? Is that the question we need to answer?
Well, let's see here.
Because if that were fixed or could be fixed to apply to this case as well, it seems like it would solve the problem. The problem's not happening until code generation, so the reach pass precedes that.
So I see. So what happens is it sees it as two separate types at that point. Ah, indeed. So right now in reach.c, I'm looking and not finding the code that I'm. Where did I put this damn thing?
I'm looking at line 384 in reach.c that says if interface and is eq type.
Thank you.
Is that the right that thing you're thinking of?
That's the thing. So what this does is it uses the same type ID. Which is not as much elision as you would need to get it right. Okay. So interestingly, possibly the right thing to do here is to actually to compact all of the interface types in the program after the expression type, after expression typing is completely done and before code generation. Does that make sense? Because we're okay with interface types being structurally compatible during type checking. Totally fine. It's totally fine for those to be two separate types that are generated and, oh, it turns out they fit, so we're fine. This array is definitely one of those arrays. And then at code generation time, we really want to get rid of the duplication, which would make these types actually identical as opposed to compatible.
Yeah, and could actually save some, make it for leaner binaries as well in some cases.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So it seems like kind of a win-win. So is that what we want to do as a separate pass after the expression pass? Or would we want to do that as part of the reach pass since we're already reaching out to everything, so to speak?
I think it can be done during the reach pass, and I think what it can do is expand on that line, 384, instead of saying use the same type ID, to somehow have a forwarding mechanism where it's, no, seriously, use the same type entirely.
Okay, I will try to summarize that in the issue ticket.
Oh, thank you.
Awesome. We're 40 minutes in. Before we continue on possibly with any other issues, does anybody who's on the call have everything they want to bring up?
Hi guys, Ian here.
Hello.
Yeah.
So just caveat, I'm a pretty noob to Pony and sort of still in the midst of learning it. But as part of my journey, I've been playing around with implementing some parsers. So I've been kind of using string quite a lot.
I'm sorry.
So yeah, I'd noticed kind of the various murmurings in in the issues around that and this kind of general call for a new string API. So I thought I'd have a go at the RFC.
Fantastic.
No sooner did I start did I kind of realize that, you know, this is a pretty contentious topic. So I just wondered if I could get any kind of high level direction from the call.
Anyone want to take that on? I'll give my crappy, ill thought out position.
Yeah,
which,
go for it.
Which is, not very good. I really don't want strings to be treated as arrays. They're not the same thing.
Okay.
Strings have semantics that are not array-like in many cases.
Yeah, like when you reverse Unicode code points where there's the code point for the little funky symbol that goes over things and suddenly it gets moved from one letter to another when you reversed it.
And that would be bad.
Yeah, because there are. I actually did research on this in the last 2 days because I don't know why, but I did. I was like, everybody keeps saying Unicode, blah, blah, blah. What? Why? Oh, yes.
I also have, I'm totally okay with leaving strings as bags of bytes. Now, that's a contentious thing right there because some people really want a strong encoding and say, why can't we say it's always UTF-8? I'm okay with saying it's always UTF-8 as well. That's a fine path. The reason I've left it as bags of bytes is primarily because of the way Unix file systems work. A Unix file name is a bag of bytes, not a UTF-8 string. So if you type ls and it displays it as UTF-8, it's because ls is choosing to do so. And there are several other places where people think strings are encoded and actually it's a bag of bytes. But that's the main one.
Yeah.
On the other hand, that can lead to the API being byte-oriented, where sometimes that's not really what people want. So with the caveat that that's why I put it there, and I'm fine with it, I also want to say it's totally fine if people go, oh, you know what, it's just a lot easier for an API to be UTF-8 encoding oriented, and that's what we're going to do.
So on that, yeah. Somebody up, go, sorry.
Go ahead, Sean.
So I was going to say the things that most concern me more than anything else with the string stuff is the performance aspect of it. Cause you know, I'm working on an application where we fling a lot of things back and forth between bytes and strings, and all of the little bits that I've contributed to string have been performance things around that of like, well, if I have an immutable string, I should be able to get, you know, some section out of the middle of it without having to make an additional copy. That's the in there, that particular case, Joe did that stuff. But also things for like being able to go from stuff comes into TCP connection as array U8 and to be able to take that into a string without having to do any copy is something, you know, which we have now, which is, you know, something I want to make sure that we maintain.
Yep. I think that's a really good point.
So, go ahead, Sylvan.
No, I was just going to say that in terms of what a string API should theoretically look like and how, yeah, sort of in the grand sense. I'm rather fond of the way OCaml handles strings. Not that it's perfect in every way, but it tries to keep to treat it as much like a collection as it can while still making it a distinct type.
So real quick, Sylvan, before I dive into some of my thoughts, you were just saying that, yeah, you really want to make sure we keep treating strings as bag of bytes. But you also have said that that you don't want to see a string as being sort of being a array U8, you know, like in a certain context where you could just have a string that is an array U8 and do string things with it. Can you expand a little bit more on what you, on why you want to see that kind of separation there in one aspect, but in the other aspect, it's sort of, you want to make sure that it's still treated as a bag of bytes? I want to understand that better.
Mostly because I'm a gigantic hypocrite, really. to be brutally honest. It's because even if you treat it as a bag of bytes, there are all kinds of bits and pieces that you do differently with strings, and you want things that are semantically strings in some places. It's a semantic difference in the type, even where the underlying representation is the same. So if you have a regular expression, you really don't want to be passing that array U8. You want to know that you're dealing with strings for regular expressions, if that makes any sense. And there are lots of other examples of that as well. That is strongly... extraordinarily hypocritical, right? Because the underlying representation is going to be the same as an array U8. So it's about having the separate type to deal with at the programming level and not down under the hood where you're absolutely right. It is. It's, you know, it's a U8 pointer.
Yeah, I don't necessarily see it as hypocritical. I just wanted to make sure that I kind of heard you express that, and I do agree with what you said. So Ian, I was thinking about trying to write a string RFC soon, but I would also be happy if you spearheaded it. So I don't want to discourage you from doing it, because I haven't done it yet, and I've got other stuff that I'm doing. So if you're doing it, I'm excited about that. But just to give you some thoughts about the direction I was thinking of taking with it, basically looking at a string as being a bag of bytes plus an encoding specifier, such that in some cases you could have a string that is, you know, basically the idea is that the encoding is you know, one of a set of primitives that we have, you know, basically like each encoding would be a primitive that corresponds to a particular type of byte encoding for the string, and the string would have that encoding, and as a consequence of that, the encoding would dictate sort of like how you iterate over code points, so basically like you'd have a byte level API still on string, so you could still treat it as a collection of bytes, but you could also have iterators over code points or possibly other methods related to code points, sort of distinguished from the byte level API, and the encoding would go along with the string object. It would, you know, it's stored in there, so that you never have any ambiguity about what the encoding of a given string is, whether it is just ASCII, you know, 8-bit ASCII, just raw bytes, or whether it is UTF-8, UTF-32, or whatever other encoding somebody wants to implement.
Yeah. So I think on the issue that was about the usability, somebody had posted a reference to the Swift string API.
Voice support. Let's keep going.
Okay. So it kind of, I mean, it had some of the characteristics you described, but, you know, so for example, do you expose an iterator of code points expressly on the kind of string class API? If you have an instance of a string, can you kind of just access those iterators? It seemed kind of inconsistent, and it seemed sort of, I don't know, it's like the, you know, I was kind of evaluating all the existing methods of string, and it's kind of like a grab bag of lots of different concerns, really, at the moment.
It's not clear. It's not always clear whether it's operating over code points or over a byte.
But even like sort of transformations, you know, uppercase and lowercasing. You know, the actual implementation of those could be arguably quite different depending on the encoding. In that, you know, if you wanted raw performance, you know, and you could assume that you're working with an ASCII byte sequence, well, you know, you don't have to jump through the hoops that you do if you're having to look at localization and how you know, some of the transformations that occur in Unicode are quite kind of...
obscure.
And also just from a kind of pragmatic standpoint with implementation, you know, maybe if we make a change to the API, we don't necessarily want to sort of go all out and say, well, look, we'll go for full Unicode support out the gate, because, you know, the effort involved in that, it may not be, you know, we might just be covering cases that are rare anyway. And I was kind of thinking, as long as we're explicit about language support for Unicode, you know, there's nothing wrong with saying, look, we're not doing full Unicode, but we'll support these subsets, and at least initially. Anyway, that was kind of some of my thinking. But I think, you know, I'm not necessarily experienced with the underlying implementation. So I think what I'd probably propose is I'll kind of put a sketchy RFC together, but I'll anticipate a lot of feedback and iteration on it, if that works for everyone else.
That sounds great.
Yeah, I think that'd be great just to get the conversation going. Something that just kind of occurred to me while we were talking about this was the possibility of sort of, because I've sort of in my head been torn between two different ways of thinking about this, and one of them was an idea of basically just saying, well, string isn't an object. We would get rid of string as an object and pass array U8 instances into encoding primitives that know how to operate on the sequence of bytes as if it had that encoding. But I think there are some still attractive reasons to keep string as an object, but I think this an idea popped into my head just now where we can sort of have our cake and eat it too with that. So, Ian, are you familiar with type parameters yet in Pony?
Yeah.
So, a thought that popped into my head would be the encoding is a primitive that is a type parameter that is passed into the string, although we could have an implicit one. And then that lets a user sort of inject their own implementation of an encoding if it's one we haven't implemented, basically the string would then, for anything that was related to the encoding, it would delegate to that method to the encoding primitive and allow the user to,
I like that idea. I wonder if this might be stupid, but we could combine that with going a step further in terms of how we break it up and say string is actually a trait. And that there are strings that are U8 in encodings that work exactly as Joe just said. But then we could also have a string that had nothing to do with U8, like a UTF-32 string that is built on, you know, an array U32-like underlying implementation that also would fulfill certain aspects of the overall string trait, if that makes any sense. So if you know exactly what you're dealing with, you have much more concrete stuff you can do with it. But if you just have a general string, well, you might still be able to reverse it, right? Regardless of the underlying implementation. But I'm not sure if that's even needed if we go with Joe's approach.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the advantages and disadvantages of each. I think it's going to need some more thought, but I do like the idea of having string as a trait, or at least I kind of like it right now. It would also allow possibilities of if you have a hard line zero copy infrastructure where you've got a bunch of byte sequences that you want to represent as if they're a single stitched together string.
Right.
Then you could implement this class that stitches them all together. It contains a collection of, it contains a collection of strings or a collection of byte sequences internally. And then it presents the string interface, and that can be used in any context that expects a string.
We could even go so far as to implement rope data structures that present a string API.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking about. Yeah, because I've been dealing a little bit with ropes and wanting them to play nicely with our APIs and trying to figure out how to do that.
One of the hard parts is that there are things, and by things I mean regular expressions, that expect strings to be only encoded in certain ways. If we had a pure Pony regular expression library, we could totally solve that problem. But that's not likely to happen anytime soon. Regular expressions are.
I put my finger next to my nose in the not it symbol.
Yeah, exactly.
I did that once, by the way. Once I wrote a pure C regular expression library, and I don't ever want to write a pure anything regular expression library ever again.
I think you bring up a good point, Sylvan. From a type system perspective, we want to be able to say, give me a string. I don't care how it's encoded. Just give me something that implements the string trait. And then you also want to be able to say, no, I want a string that is represented as a single byte sequence with this encoding.
Right.
And that's specified by the type system. And then we have the encodings have various methods to convert between each other. Yeah.
It's almost like this is a hard problem.
Yeah, but I think we're kind of getting somewhere. It's probably going to take some more thought and iteration to come up with something good. But yeah, Ian, we really appreciate you sort of trying trying to get this conversation rolling, because there's a bunch of conversations like this that we desperately need to have, but we're sort of torn between all of them at once.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I'm just coming from a kind of a beginner's mind to the language, and strings are a fairly kind of fundamental construct when you're monkeying around with something. And I guess one of the kind of details is more like, as somebody who doesn't have much insight into the language, you know, you're writing string literals from the bat, but you know what they are and what they represent is kind of a weird implementation detail that you know unless it's explicit, we're not really gonna so it's kind of like, for me, it's like presenting an API that's convenient but still doesn't hide the kind of a bit the sort of performance oriented aspects of it.
I think that's good thinking.
Cool. Well, that's great. Thanks, guys. I think that's given me a bit more focus and direction on the conversation. So I will I'll take on that initial draft of the RFC, and I won't be precious about it. So
okay. And do keep in mind that the possibility of one way to go with this would be to punt entirely and say it's just UTF-8. Anything else can go away, and that's what we're going to do. Like, it's possible that that level of simplicity is what we end up wanting. So that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, if that's where we start from, as long as it's a better API and has, you know, at least equivalent performance characteristics, we can always come back and do more on it later. I'm a big fan of baby steps.
Yeah, and I think we could still sort of say we're only going to implement UTF-8 for now, but then expect that, you know, it set it up in such a way that other things could be implemented later without disrupting the API again.
Yeah.
Sure.
And yeah, you're definitely right, Ian. I mean, when people first start learning Pony, I tell them, you know, yeah, you go ahead, dive in, try to avoid using strings. Because all the problems I had when I first started turned out to be related not to problems I had with Pony, but to problems I had with the string API. And like in the first,
let's be honest, related to me putting stupid names on things.
it was more than that. There were usability problems in the string API that when you're not really versed in Pony, like, can be really difficult to figure out what you're doing, right? But and it needs to get fixed. So yeah, awesome. Thank you.
Okay. Great.
All right, and we are at the end of our time. Thank you everyone for coming. We did not get through all of our needs discussion once, but that's fine. We'll keep working through. If people will stop finding bugs and stop submitting fixes for bugs and stop creating new RFCs, then we'll be able to get through that backlog. So
what we really need to do is kill this language.
So let's regularly end every single sync where we have lots of stuff we didn't get through, because that means we're making more and more progress in a way. Cool. All right. Sit.